Okay, there we are. Okay, now I'm on. All right, so we've been going through, is it a year-long series? It's been a year. Yeah, 150 episode podcast. No, we've been going through this series for quite some time on singleness, family, and marriage. It's been a really great series, and I've enjoyed it immensely, more when I'm sitting out there than when I'm up here. But I've got an interesting one. So I was just kind of joking this morning, the title of this thing is Unique Cases and Special Needs. And so the unique cases, I just put an asterisk because that just seems like a bucket for everything that's not remaining. But we're going to talk about special needs too. The other thing about it is that Caleb and Nick gave us resource material, which was amazing in each section of this. So this week when I came to mind, I'm like, let's just dive deep into that resource material. And I went in there and it was empty. There was no resource material other than good luck. But they did give me topics. And there's so many that I won't go through them all today because you could write a book on various things. I think one of the reasons I was asked to cover this is because in these unique cases as examples of, and they're unique cases in family and marriage, some of the things that were listed were adoption and children with special needs. Now, I'll just make it really clear from the beginning, and the other ruling elders and teaching elders who've been working through this series have made it clear that we've been giving a lot of examples from our lives, not to hold ourselves up as perfect examples, rather to show examples of God's grace and mercy, right? In other words, some of these things, by God's grace, we've done well. Maybe. We'll just say it that way. Other things we know we have not, and we're, teaching from experience. I do that often, right? It's really typical for parents to teach their children, don't do this thing because I did it and it was the wrong thing. It's the same here. So don't, and I will give some, as I kind of talk a little bit through this, I will give some examples from our lives, my family's lives about adoption, about education, and some other things, and those aren't meant to be absolutes for every family. So in other words, I'll give you a very concrete example. My family has always intentionally, and I'll talk about later, chosen a Christian school path for education. That does not mean that I think that every family in the church should follow the path we did. Okay, I just want to make that clear. There are reasons we've done that. But I think I've always been a big advocate that parents, Christian parents, need to pick the path that in faith that they feel is the best path for their family. All right. And that's just one example. I really appreciated, I'll embarrass Matt Geiger a little bit here for a moment, but I really appreciated last week where he shared from the things he's experienced, the suffering, the challenges. I'll try to do that as well. We'll go through that and we'll talk about some of these things. But one thing what I am not an expert in was much of anything really, but what I'm definitely not an expert in is all things related to adoption or all things related to children with special needs. I'm not trained in those things specifically, but I have a child who's adopted and a child who has special needs. And so I can talk about that. Plus, I've had the blessing to be around families, especially in my son's early life, that had some of them having profound special needs, which is a little different than what I experienced. But it gave me a certain perspective and empathy upon those families and understanding the unique needs of the families who have children with special needs. And so you might find yourself in here, you may know someone, you may have a child this way. I'll try to be as, in God's providence, my wife is incredibly sick today, so she is not here. My son, who we'll talk about today, is over there, so I'll say anything I want, and they are not present. No, we are an open book as a family. There's reasons for that in my personal history that I've moved from being more of a private person to more public in what I share. That was related to my own personal challenges with depression, and keeping things bottled away and hidden proved to be destructive. And in sharing those things in my life, I have found them to be not only beneficial to me, but to others. And so we'll try to do the same thing. So I would like this to be conversational. I mean, you can certainly get me to lecture for the entire time. It's not hard for me to do that. But I'd like it to interact, ask questions. This isn't going to be overly structured. I've got some scriptural examples I want to share, but I want to talk through some of these issues. So let me just start with this. My oldest son, if you don't know me, I should reintroduce myself. So I'm one of the ruling elders, D.B. Cummings. I have two sons, Matthew and Xander, who look nothing alike, but I forget that, right? You know, so people don't always know that they're related as being children of Amy and I. My oldest son, Xander, is adopted. And we won't go through that whole journey because we don't have enough time. We'll lose track of the main plot. But it's enough to say that Amy and I went through an extended period of infertility. That's a story in itself. I'm going to talk a little bit about suffering as part of this. And I think it's, I think it'd be great sometimes to do a small mini series on the nature of suffering in the Christian life and the doctrine behind it. But one of the things I can say clearly is that the Lord in his providence uses suffering for our good. In fact, it's one of the main drivers in our sanctification. Now, we don't go looking for it, right? We don't get up in the morning and think, how can I suffer today? But yet, as you grow older in the faith, you realize it's those moments of suffering, and I'm using that as really a broad term here, but those times of suffering and misery in this life where God in his mercy manifests his glory the most, and we grow, right? And suffering is such an intricate part of the work of redemption and sanctification that we see that Jesus himself, the Lord God, took suffering upon himself in order to redeem us. And so it's no light matter. The reason I mention that is that when we were first married, I think this is not unusual for young men, but I was very nervous about having children because how was I going to pay for them and provide, because I decided I was doing everything apparently, as opposed to trusting the Lord. And it wasn't long until we realized we went from, oh, it's taking a while to have a child to, oh, this isn't happening, that I moved from being concerned about having children to being concerned about ever being able to have children. So Amy and I went through that for an extended period. My wife, if you know her, she's a very gentle soul. She's very upbeat. She doesn't worry about a lot. She doesn't stress. She's complete opposite of me, outgoing. We were more opposites when we started our journey together. We've kind of come a little closer to each other over time, for our good, I think. But what was really hard for me was watching my wife really struggle with not being able to have children. It was a mixture of things, but at the end of the day, it was just very unlikely that Amy was going to have a biological child, right? We were going to have a biological child. Now, there's one in that room right now that is our biological child, so God proved that wrong as well. But early on in my studies in college, where I went and studied Christian ministries, I started to learn about the work of adoption in our sanctification. So if you're familiar with the Westminster Confession of Faith, let's see if I can bring the right passage up here. Chapter 12 of the Westminster Confession of Faith talks about us being adopted as God's children. It says, all those that are justified, God vouchsafeth in and for his only Son, Jesus Christ, to make partakers of the grace of adoption, by which they, that's us, are taken into the number and enjoy the liberties and privileges of the children of God, have his name put upon them, receive the spirit of adoption, have access to the throne of grace with boldness, are enabled to cry, Abba, Father, are pitied, protected, provided for, and chastened by him as by a father, yet never cast off, but sealed to the day of redemption and inherit the promise as heirs of everlasting salvation. It's one of the most beautiful doctrines, and it's one we don't talk about. We talk about justification and sanctification, which we should talk about all the time. But the third one we should talk about just as much, and we don't tend to, is the doctrine of adoption. Because we go from being God's enemies to not being his slaves or servants, although we certainly are servants of God. We go to be his children with all the rights and privileges. And I think that's a little lost in our culture because we don't talk about the nature of children in the same way in the ancient world, but to be an heir was to be the inheritor of all the privileges and benefits. So as children of God, we are sons and daughters of the King. So that's, you know, we'll be referred to in the scriptures a royal priesthood, and let's set the priesthood apart for a minute and realize that we are part of the kingdom of God as not only the citizens of that kingdom, although that's amazing, we're also heirs to God the Father. We're his children through Christ. Yeah.
Yeah, so one of the things that you can talk to about adoption is you adopted Xander. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
So that on the birth certificate, it is as though you and Amy were in this experience from the moment that you came into this earth.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's no evidence otherwise.
Yep.
Right? And so someone does a background check or whatever, it's you and Amy on that birth certificate. And the adoption of Christ is such an in the family of God, knowing that.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
At the moment of our adoption,
that's right.
I just think that symbolism is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
That we are heirs to Adam in our sin, and that when we are saved, it is though we go back 2,000 years, and we are Christ's at the moment on the cross, and that we were never not Christ.
Yep, that's absolutely true. It is. I actually taught on adoption. Oof. 2018, something like that here. And I put both birth certificates up.
Yeah.
And I said, show me the difference. Well, the names, that was it. And you're absolutely right. So Xander's original name was Nathan. He was named Nathan. I think I know his last name, but I won't share it because I got to protect the mother. And when the new birth certificate was issued, it was Donald Alexander Porter Cummings. He's got a lot of names. We only thought we might have one. So I gave him as many family names as I could. And that was the other thing too. Not only do we put our name on him, right? And says we're his parents. Same kind. Exactly. Birth certificate's identical to one for a biological child. But it also said, I put Donald on there because we have this weird tradition of there's four generations now of us who have Donald as our first name, but not as our middle name. Alexander was the first Cummings to come to the United States. Porter is a tradition in Amy's family to put the main name of the mother is the middle name of the firstborn son. We gave that kid as many names as possible in the family to say, you are ours, you are part of this family, right? There is no difference between you and your brother. Although Xander sometimes likes to tell Matthew, we chose Xander, we didn't choose Matthew, but we'll set that aside, let them work that one out amongst themselves. So the reason I mention all that about adoption, and thank you, Matt, for talking about that, was because I was so enraptured by that doctrine from kind of the early phases of my Christian growth, that when Amy and I first started talking about marriage, that's a whole different story. I asked her to marry me before we dated, and then 2 weeks later we were engaged. So that was a pretty fast journey. But one of the things we talked about is we both wanted to adopt. That was always part of the plan. However, again, I looked at finances. I thought this will be challenging. Biological is easier. It is not easier. I'll just let you know that. But adoption in the United States can be quite expensive. It's a problem. Even in Christian circles, it's a problem that needs to be solved because it prevents the adoption of children to people who are ready to open their home. You can have a biological child and quote unquote not have the money, right? God provides. But you can't adopt a child easily without proving all kinds of financial stability, and it's just a problem. It has fed into the obsession with abortion in our country because we've had a challenge with that. That being said, that forced my hand as well, because the Lord was not bringing a child into our lives, and so we did some basic fertility treatments, things that we were morally comfortable with. We went, and then also I set a budget, and I said, when we hit this amount, we're done, right? And so we stopped, and we said, I guess we're adopting, because that's what the Lord's going to do. And we were excited about that. And we also found out, I won't go through all the details, but we worked actually through Catholic Charities in Missouri, and they had this policy that basically it was a certain percentage of your income. And basically you reimbursed whatever you of up to a certain amount, the costs that were attributed to Catholic Charities, so that they could, you know, recoup some of the costs. But basically I could afford it because they basically took a percentage, right? And I think it was 10%. It wasn't that bad. And then at the time, the U.S., the tax system still had pretty good credits and rebates and so forth for adoption. So we ended up in the end of the day between Missouri, the federal government and so forth, actually making money on Xander's adoption over time in tax credits. It took a few years to reclaim it. Those don't exist anymore, and it's a shame. The reason I mention that is that adoption comes with a whole host of challenges. So we were, normally it takes 18 months to 2 years from the minute you start the process to where a child, to where the social worker comes to you and says there's a child ready for you to adopt. And just so you know, everybody's coming, I'm just teaching on this unique cases and special needs in families, marriages, and parenting. So what that means is we're gonna talk about a few different things than we have been, and one of those is adoption, the other special needs. And since my family has experienced both, I'm gonna talk to those things. So please ask any questions you have as we go. So we normally it's 18 months to 2 years. So we sort of dug in, we're ready, okay, we've been married 6 years, no children, we got another two coming. At the time I felt like I was really getting a lot older. I don't think that way now when I look back, but it felt like it then. But I didn't, my dad had me later in life, and I kind of didn't want to be quite as old as he was. You know, I wanted to be younger, if possible, to let me do more things. But anyhow, about 6 months later, Amy would know the dates if she was here, we got a call saying there's a potential for a child. I'm like, fantastic. Now, here's where it gets a little unusual. So Catholic Charities in Missouri, and I'm just going to give you the facts, and you can do with it as you please. In Catholic Charities in Missouri, only adopted white children to Catholics. Okay, so that's how that worked. And the reason being is white children were the most sought out, right? Now we went to Catholic Charities mostly because we were very interested in adopting a biracial child. They were very hard to adopt in Missouri. Biracial children were actually for a long time in Missouri listed under the special needs program because, which seems unusual, but they were listed there because they were a case that required a handling to get adoptions completed. It was really hard to find people to adopt them. On the other hand, Amy and I had a heart for this. This is who we wanted to adopt. I don't remember the path that took us that journey. I think it was because we talked to somebody early who told us about this, and we're like, we would love to adopt a biracial child. Biracial children were hard to adopt because biracial in this case mostly meant in Missouri, mostly meant black children or children with black and white parents. So that's what biracial can be a lot of things. But they were hard to adopt to white families and they were hard to adopt to black families. And so they found themselves just sort of in the system. And we had a heart for this. We're like, we want to do this. We moved to a part of the county where there was more, a greater number of blacks and whites together. So there'd be more like 40-60, 50-50, because we thought that would be a good place for our child to be raised, to see people that looked like him. We had all kinds of plans. We entered into that program 6 months, and then we also had to fill out this big long form that talked about everything we were comfortable with adopting, situations we were adopting, and situations we weren't. And the social worker was like, you have to be honest. So, and it was a long list of medical problems and potential special needs and all these things that we were willing to take. Some people were very passionate about wanting to adopt children with certain special needs. Maybe they were fiscally able to do it. Certainly they were more emotionally or mentally prepared to do that. We went through that, we listed it, we went through what we were comfortable with. So the social worker comes to my house 6 months later and says, we have a child. Now that was just unusual. We have a parent, she's gonna have a baby in 6 months, was it 6 or 3, I forget. 3 months or so, and they're interested. She's looked at your profile and she's interested in you as a family. Fantastic. He said, the challenge is, both of her parents are institutional, or both of the parents are institutionalized, or have been. The father was mandated to be institutionalized by the state, and the mother had been in and out voluntarily. In other words, they both had mental illness, some substance abuse, all kinds of things going on. I said, not a problem. I had a significant problem with depression. Amy and I both had family members with mental illness. I'm like, we had a biological child. They'd have a mixed bag of history as well. That wasn't a problem. So we went to meet the mother, and we were so excited. But one challenge that they had told us is the mother had abused alcohol and probably drugs for about 6 months of the pregnancy with no prenatal care. So when she came into Catholic Charities, they immediately brought her in. She stayed in a shared home with other women, and they made sure she was not consuming alcohol, not taking drugs, and received all the medical care she needed. I met the woman twice, once when she interviewed us, and it was clear that she had had a hard life, some of it at her own hands, but reading between the lines, it was pretty clear that she had suffered abuse, probably at the hands of her father, who was also an alcoholic. Because she interviewed Amy for like 5 seconds and then just focused on me, making sure I was going to be a good dad. And I still feel the weight of that today, like it happened yesterday. But she chose us. I won't go through the whole process because when Xander was born, we got to be with him in the hospital. He almost died there in the hospital because he basically received an infection as he was being born, and he was put into the NICU. We got access to them, even though we weren't his parents at the time, because my wife happened to have a medical bracelet on her arm. They put it on her arm so she could go in and see Xander right after he was born, and that gave us access for the rest of the time. Xander was supposed to come home after 2 weeks. It took 6 months. There was a whole legal battle. I won't go into that because it's not apropos to this story, but there was a legal challenge with the state of Missouri simply because the caretaker that was appointed to the father as the guardian just didn't want to deal with the paperwork. And so she just ignored the fact that Xander was sitting in a foster care, private foster care, fortunately, but foster care home for 6 months with a birth mother that wanted him in a home and a father who was institutionalized. We went through that. That was a long process where I nearly gave up on this particular adoption. I can't imagine it now. But then I nearly gave up on it because my wife was just broken. We prepared the nursery, and then we had to seal it. I closed it for like 6 months. We hardly went in there because it was too painful to look at while we were waiting for Xander to come home. There were multiple days we thought we were going to go get him, only to hear at the last minute we weren't. Finally, we were able to, quote unquote, hire a lawyer who basically gave us time pretty much for free. And he had written the adoption for the state of Missouri, the book on the adoption code for the state of Missouri. And he worked with the judge, and he worked with the attorneys, and worked with the attorney that represented the people who, or the guardian of the birth father, and found a path where everybody would be happy. And one day, we got a call. Bring him home. So we didn't tell any, we told our parents so that Amy's mother could go with us to get him, but we didn't tell our church because they had been through a roller coaster with us, you know, for 6 months. And one day I walked in with Xander in a pumpkin seat, and I just set it at the church, and I just set it in front of the pastor's wife, and I said, "It's a boy." And she goes, she thought I brought someone else's kid in because we had so many babies in the church at that point. She thought I brought somebody else's kid in. And I set him down. I said, "It's a boy." She goes, "Don't joke like that." I'm like, "I'm not." It was a small church. We were about 60, 80 people at the time. That was a very powerful Sunday where we praised God because we came in with the child. Adoption is a hard journey in many ways. Even in, I'll say, the most typical cases, that's a good word to use, adopted children have a struggle, right? There are adopted children. We don't always recognize the unique bonds that go on between biological children and their mothers, especially in the womb, right? That's a powerful bond. And then when the child's born, the parents, you know, parents are holding that child almost immediately. And all that, we've learned over the years, all that physical contact, because we are spiritual and physical beings, and those things are bound together. All that contact, interaction, all of that, the voices the child's heard in the womb for 9 months between mom and dad talking, all those things create attachment. And adopted children can also often have difficulties with attachment. It's very normal because they have been taken out of one situation, put into another. Xander had the benefit of coming home, going to one private foster care family, going to another private, really these families, when I say private foster care, they were members of the Roman Catholic Churches, the local. They did this because they loved the children and they were pro-life, and I appreciate that. But Xander had to move to a couple of different families during that, and he spent an extended time with one family he doesn't even remember. And so when we got him, he was much bigger than he had been before. But we were very concerned about attachment. And we had friends who were in counseling and psychology, and she was always telling us all the dangers of attachment. And so that gave us some pause. But I finally told Amy, I'm like, this is not a duck, right? Ducks bond to whatever is walking in front of them when they're born. It's like, this is a child. And if God can take me, who is his enemy, and make me his child, and in my sin I still love him as much as I do, how much more, how can he not bond this child to us, right? Now, we had to be aware of that challenge, but we did not want to let that discourage us. Xander's been an interesting, it's been interesting raising him, and he is, I'll talk a little bit about special needs now. Bonding has not been a problem. I've never seen a kid, he loves people. He's attached to them. He feels connected to them. He feels connected to people in ways I don't. So I wonder sometimes who's got the attachment problem. But he just feels connected. But family time is important. We do things as a unit, you know? We go to an amusement park. We're like, hey, you two wanna go do your own thing? Nope, everybody's gotta be together. That's what Xander says, right? We all gotta just stay as a unit and travel. And it's interesting to watch that. But he feels loved, he feels connected. And one of the biggest pieces of that is a church. I will say this, when we talk a little bit about application, that adoption is not for every Christian family. Let me say that really quickly. There are some churches, I've never run into this personally, but I have talked to families who, in some churches, because they're pro-life, and that's good, there's been pressure on families to adopt. Not every family is called to adopt. It just isn't the thing. And you're like, well, how do I know if my family's called to adopt? Because you want to adopt. I mean, there's not really anything more mysterious. I think every family should think about it. I think every family should sit down. I think it's good to be educated in it. But I think, you know, if you're a family who's considering it, or if you're, you know, the grandparents or friends of families considering it, be there with them. But they need to make the choice. It was tough. We dealt with generational things, you know. My mom didn't know exactly what to do with adoption because she'd never known anybody was adopted. My grandfather, my wife's grandfather, bless his soul, first question he asked Amy was, will the child be white? And Amy just broke into tears. To the point her grandfather never broached that subject again and couldn't have loved Xander anymore. They adored him. But there are generational things where people want children to look like them, all these kinds of things. There's all kinds of obstacles and difficulties. But the blessing of it far outweighs it. I always said that if we'd only had Matthew, I would have been the most legalistic parent, because I would have just told you, just do these five things and your child will be obedient, because Matthew just follows rules. He's just as sinful as the rest of us. He just is a rule follower. He's like, my dad was a rule follower, I'm a rule follower, Matthew's the same way. Xander always had to test every boundary at every position, and he always had to have clear information as to why we were doing what we're doing. That was challenging, but it was good for me because I had two very different children, completely different, with different experiences. And it gave me an opportunity to have empathy for other parents, recognizing that you can have one child that looks one way and one child that looks another, and it doesn't really show what kind of parent you are, because they can be all kinds of different ways. We knew Xander would have a lot of challenges. When someone abuses alcohol and drugs during a pregnancy, it can lead to all kinds of unexpected consequences. Quickly at his birth, we recognized just by looking at him physically after he was able to recover from his illness, the doctor said, it doesn't look like he has, I don't know what they call it now, but at the time was fetal alcohol syndrome. He didn't seem to have that, but he did have fetal alcohol effects, which means those things impact the way the brain works. He also because he was adopted, was going to have potential attachment disorders and some other things. And then he just had a whole, because of all the things he had been through, it was really hard to know how he was impacted. We use the term these days normally typical and then special needs to contrast. Yeah, I like the word typical. It's better than the word normal because we're all impacted by a fallen world. We all have stuff, right? We're all physically and we're spiritually impacted for sure. And we have physical impacts to it as well. My mother used to love to remind me, she used to say, you know, from the moment we're born, we're dying. I'm like, thanks, Mom, that's very encouraging. But she was right. I mean, really, it's from the moment of conception, right? We're headed towards a path. There's physical suffering that's part of this fallen world, so that's not unique. But in Xander's case, he had some challenges. He was in a public preschool program briefly. I really wanted him in Christian education. Amy did too. Her interest was in his exposure to the gospel and education. Mine was too, but I also had a very miserable public school education experience growing up, extremely miserable. And so that biased me one way. And I wanted to, you know, I would learn later that there's no escaping certain things, right? But nonetheless, I wanted that for my children. But again, I started getting nervous about cost. I was making, you know, less than zero. You know, I was working. Amy was staying home now that Xander came home. I really was barely making ends meet. And she had the opportunity to put him in a public school preschool program briefly, where they could also do evaluations and so forth. You know, we talked about, let me mention this really quick too. We talked about the roles of men and women a lot. One of the things I've noticed about women, and I saw it in my wife, is how naturally she began to very intentionally look at Xander's development from the moment he came home and work towards making sure everything was proceeding as expected. She tapped every resource she could in order to get some help. We had a program called Parents as Teachers in Missouri, where they would send someone to your home who would just kind of walk through the development cycle of your child. And she'd say, well, he's not doing this yet. And they'd say, not a problem yet. Most children do it around this age, but that's not a problem. But eventually they began to notice some challenges. And so Amy was the one that kept me focused on those things, and praise God for it. We had him in preschool. He was in a class with a fantastic preschool teacher, but it was pretty evident pretty quick that Xander could not be in a mainstream class. He was just too much in a large, you know, these preschool programs in that public school were like 30 kids. He could not sit, he could not focus, he could not do any of the things the other children did. She said, we have a special needs group. Can we do that? We're like, absolutely. Like, let's take care. Unfortunately, we got in that program, our perspective changed a bit, because frankly, the teacher just wasn't interested in the challenge. And the school system, in fairness to them, was overburdened, right? They didn't have the finances or the flexibility or anything else they needed. They had excellent therapists, like a physical and occupational therapist who could work with the challenges, but they weren't allowed to go outside whatever was prescribed for them, so they couldn't try the newest research or try different things to help, you know, with certain kinds of activities or whatever it is. And so there was limits, and he had limited time. Somebody at our church, because Xander was always a handful and sometimes was labeled as being, you know, a difficult child because he was a handful. One parent of the church who had been watching Xander for a long time happened by God's providence to be I think it was an educational conference or something put on by a church in the area, and somebody had been handing out pamphlets for a Christian school in Missouri. There is a Christian school in Missouri that specifically works with children of special needs, both all the way to profound needs. So they will deal with kids who can transition eventually into a mainstream education, or they'll work with those children who are going to have profound needs all their life and need a special path. It's a really unique school. It's called Promise Christian Academy. If you ever get a chance, it's in St. Louis. You can Google it. It's fantastic. He had like five or six kids in his class. They focused on every day. They had an extended time of physical activity that was very intentional in order to be able to wear these kids out in a proper way that allowed them to be able to focus. And then they would begin to work with those children and figure out where they were. Were they someone that would need to be at the school long term, or would they be someone who could eventually transition? We didn't know for a year or so what was the case with Xander. I mean, it's really hard to tell with a kid going into kindergarten where he was. But eventually it became evident that he was gonna be able to mainstream. I won't get into all the things, but the public school teacher basically told us that Xander's situation was hopeless. He would always have to be in some kind of program where he was basically squirreled away, and she basically said he wouldn't amount to much. That's what she told Amy. That's what she told my wife. You don't tell a mother their child's not gonna do well. Amy was like, the child will do well. And we could accept whatever God had called for Xander to do. Whatever his abilities were, that's fine. But we were not going to limit him ourselves. We wanted to serve God by serving that child and do everything we could for him. And so we spent extended time in that community. And in that Christian school is where I really began to understand the challenges of parents. And this is sort of where I'm gonna go from here. I've only got about 8 minutes or so left. And what I wanna talk about is the application. What does the church do for families with children of special needs? Large churches, like really large churches, will have structured programs. There's budget for it. They'll work towards attracting those families. and building a ministry for them because it's needed. Not every church can do that, right? We were in a small church. What they did is they went on the journey with us, with Xander. We were never alone. My family was back in Pennsylvania. Amy's family was in the area, and they were great, but they only could do some, they could only help so much. We needed our church family. They spent time working with us, understanding us, talking with us about what we were going through with Xander. There were times when Xander was in Sunday school, he was always a handful, always a handful. And we had him in Sunday school, and one of the teachers said, you know what, I want to go to the Christian school, to the special needs school, and spend a day there. So she went up, and she spent a day there just learning various techniques, what the challenges were, how this worked, what they need to do, and she brought that back into the Sunday school class just so she could work with our son. That was the only reason. There are a lot of things that we can do, but the first and foremost is to realize that parents with children with special needs will feel isolated very often. And the more profound those needs, the more isolated they can feel. We knew families that would go to worship. The husband would go 1 week and the wife the next week because they had a special needs child who had involuntary like noises and so forth, right? They couldn't control it. There was no way to manage that. And then the more anxiety or unusual situation, the more vocal the child was. And so some of these children were near adults. And so they felt like they couldn't bring them to worship. It was always very discouraging to me to see that situation. I felt for them, not only because they couldn't be in worship every week, but there was a covenant child there, made in the image of God, who certainly could be redeemed. Even if they were unable to understand or speak, God can do what God sees fit to do through the Holy Spirit, who wasn't able to be exposed to the ordinary means of grace. If we as a church ever find ourselves in that position, we'll just have to figure it out, because those parents need to be under the word and the sacrament, and those children need to be at least under the word. Just because we don't understand how God works in that way doesn't mean that he doesn't. You know, if you think about Jesus in the New Testament, in the Gospels, his mercy and compassion towards towards those who were suffering from lifelong disabilities. You can think of how he healed the lame. He did it even for the man lowered through the roof. If you remember, the man doesn't even speak or say anything. No, it didn't say he couldn't, but he doesn't. And not only does he heal him, but he tells him that, you know, he talks to him about salvation and shows him that God's divine providence and Jesus' authority in forgiving sins. God works in the lives of families who have children with special needs. You know, it's interesting in John, I think, let me see if I can find it here. Is that John 9:3 up there? Yeah. So in that is in John 9, the disciples asked Jesus about this man. Let me see here. Here we go. As he, Jesus, passed by, he saw a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, it was not this man that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. I think that the nature of suffering, we don't have time to go through all of that, but parents of children with special needs, the more profound they are, the more this is true, they suffer. They often suffer in silence. They often say everything's okay, but they struggle. But when you get in groups with those people, when you have a special needs child, they'll tend to share more about what they're struggling through. You know, in God's providence, Xander, most people don't know Xander has any challenges. You don't really notice it. He's mainstreamed academically. He's a very accomplished student. He's a better student than I was at his age, although that's not hard, but he's a better student. And he's extremely bright. But there are times when I have difficult times talking to Xander because he thinks very differently in the way his thoughts work. His diagnosis is very difficult. I think that there will be some challenges for him when he goes out into the world. He makes friends very easily, but the way he understands is very different. He's very empathetic. He believes in justice. He's always defended those who are weaker. He's always been caring, but he's always got his heart hurt the easiest. He seems like the toughest, but he's actually the most gentle. It is very difficult when you have that situation, because those, when you have a child with special needs, especially the more typical they might appear, their behavior can be seen as problems with obedience. Now, we're all creatures who are sinful, right? So with children with special needs, there's a mixture of sin and then disability as well. And sometimes sorting those things out is very difficult. How do you discipline? There were times when I thought Xander was lying. He would say he was lying when I asked him, and I realized later he wasn't, but he didn't know what to say, and so he assumed he was lying because I didn't understand him. It took a long time to crack that nut, to try to figure out that problem. Those things are really difficult. And you can feel like a horrible parent because you don't understand your child. Matthew's a pretty good mix of Amy and I, and he's pretty easy for me to figure out. I pretty much know what he's thinking because I thought the same way, and so I'm able to catch him quite a bit because he's taken similar paths to me. Xander is always an enigma, and only by God's grace have we done that, and to have a conversation with him. But there are moments when he just opens up, and we have these beautiful conversations, and they're so deep, and the next minute he just, the door's closed for 3 days, right? And you don't know. Why do I say all this? This has been a very meandering lesson, and I apologize for that, but the point of it is this, that in both the cases of adoption and in cases of special needs, the church is a haven for families. It is a place where we can go and find compassion. Like now, Amy and I can be a resource to others. But there was a time when people who had never adopted and had no special needs children could come alongside us and love us, because they didn't know what we were going through, and that was okay. But they worked and they loved Xander as a covenant child. He was adored. When we moved church buildings. We were in the same church for 9-10 years before we left, and I had served as a ruling elder for seven or eight of those. But we had moved buildings, and we'd moved from pews to chairs like this. And the boys had Velcro shoes, and they sat crisscross applesauce right next to me because I had to keep Xander. Keeping Xander in a seat was like a full-time job. So we'd keep him in his seat. We had him in their seats, and we sit in chairs like this in church. When I began to notice that the brand new churches brand new chairs we bought had started to get the material was pooling because of their little Velcro shoes, right? And I thought, oh man, I've ruined these chairs, you know? And I felt bad, and I was telling the senior pastor about it, and he didn't think twice about it. Neither would I now, right? But that was a couple of years later when we were getting to leave. He talked about our seats. They were like second row, somewhere in a similar spot like this. And he told the congregation that those Velcro, that those little tears in the seats, those little pulls and threads of the seats were so important as a sign of God's grace and mercy, because those two children shouldn't have been there. And God made it possible. The year that Xander finally came home was January of 2007. We brought him home on January 5th, the day after my birthday. It was a good present. He was baptized not long later. 3 months later, Amy would find out she was pregnant, which was supposed to not be possible. Matthew was born in November of that year. We bookended the year at the church. We had the first baptism and the last baptism of the year. It was also a very good tax year because we went from no dependents to two, but that was the biggest thing. No, it was amazing because in God's grace, if it's not for suffering and sorrow and heartache and pain in this life, we do not know the greatness and mercy and mightiness and lovingness of God. You know, when we look at the Gospels and we see the suffering of Christ, especially in the high priestly prayer towards the end of John, where we see how much Jesus is suffering to the point that he's actually sweating blood, we see, I don't understand it all, but there is a necessity in God's redemptive work for suffering in order that we fully understand the power and greatness and mercy of God. And how I can tell you this, in both having gone through adoption and through what are a tremendous struggle with special needs, I would never change that path, because in it, I have seen the greatness of God's power, the height of his mercy, and I have understood more profoundly his love as our Father in a way that I would never have if it wasn't especially for Xander, but also in the birth of Matthew, who, like I said, shouldn't have been born. In less than 2 weeks, Xander will graduate from high school and he'll go on to college. But Lord in his grace has provided all kinds of opportunities, but the fact is that really those opportunities are earthly ones. We just wanted to do the best, whatever the Lord wanted us to do with that child, whatever he ends up doing. We wanted him to know Christ, we wanted him to love Christ, and we wanted him to seek to always glorify Christ. That's our goal. And I'll end there. Any questions?
Mm-hmm. Person coming to your home.
Mm-hmm.
And you drew on that.
Yes.
And politics.
That's right.
And social media have, trained us, unfortunately, to put down a lot of professional help.
Yeah. Yep.
And just, we may have a prejudice.
Yeah.
That is unfounded and unfortunate. That we need to keep our mouths shut.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really important point. God, I'm glad you brought it up. I'm going to address that because I think it should be put out there. God in his providence provides all kinds of resources to the church. All right, and to God's people. If it's not sinful, right, use it, right? That's your point. I mean, we had that woman who came into our home, that was her mission. Like, I don't know if she was a believer, but I wouldn't have been surprised if she was, because she was coming in to help us. There were people we met in the social programs that were a disaster and others that were incredible. And God in his providence uses people, some believers, some unbelievers, to serve. I mean, if they hadn't come in, we wouldn't have been on the path we are. You're absolutely right. Take advantage of those resources. I'll share this. I don't talk a lot about finances and things, but I'm going to share this with you so it helps, if it's a help. We get a check every month since Xander came home, just about, from the state of Missouri to help with, even when we moved here, even when we told them we didn't need it, they continued to do it. Why? Because it was much more fiscally responsible for a child to be placed in a stable home than it was for the state of Missouri to have them in their social services system, right? They did, because we were like, well, should we take this? And the state's like, it costs us more if you don't adopt this child, right? This is a better situation for him, and he provides it. And when Xander turned 18, it was supposed to end, and we called them to say, hey, just so you know, he's 18, so you if you want to stop this, because I didn't want to have to return money. And they're like, well, you can file an extension as long as he's in high school. So we did that. And we gave him some of it this year. Because it's helped offset the cost. It helped pay for school. Let me tell you, that private school, half of it was funded by independent donations, so we had to pay the other half. It costs more per year for me to pay for Xander to go there than it did for me to go to college at a private school when I was younger. And we didn't make any money. I still don't know how we paid for it. It was fishes and loaves, right? I mean, it was just God provided through all kinds of means. In fact, we didn't even ever apply for financial aid in there. It just came through other channels. It was really expensive, extremely expensive. It was needed. And there were private donations that paid half that education. So we only got charged the half that was left because the people they had in there and the resources were amazing. But use the resources that God puts in front of you, whether it's from the state or whether it's from, use them. Be blessed by them. We need to recognize those things are made available, and it made a big difference, and God uses them. That was a great point. Thanks, Bill. I'm glad you mentioned that. Anything else? We're running a little over time, so yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you don't know what they're experiencing and you don't know, like you're talking about, maybe the suffering or just kind of the things that they're handling that come with those.
Yeah. No, I think it's important. By the way, we can do that ourselves. I've got one in there, right? I went through this and I was still like, you know, you find yourself making, we all make judgment calls. We have to be careful. You know, it was interesting. One of the first comments we got about Xander and Matthew when we came here, because nobody here shared that journey with us, right? It was almost, so much was, CCS saw a lot of it because Xander was there and we were still working through things. And they knew that coming in. But the church really didn't, because they were older. But it was funny, Xander and Matthew were sitting in there during the service, and one of the first comments we got, we'd only been here a couple of weeks, but somebody said, wow, your kids really sit there and are focused. And I'm like, if you only knew. Like, if you only knew the journey, right? If you only knew the journey. Like, and that was really encouraging, not because I wanted them to think my kids were perfect. It was just nice to know my kids could do it. There was a time, this is maybe my last thing, and I'll close with this. We were at a breakfast with Santa Claus at a church. I'll let you reserve your judgment for that. There was this, we were at somebody else's church, and but they called him up to tell him a story, right? And all the kids ran up. They sat down. I apologize for getting choked up. Xander and Matthew went up to the front, and Xander sat for 10 minutes and listened to a story. I praise God for that, because Xander could not sit until he went to that school. He couldn't sit like a typical child for any length of time and just do the things. Matthew could always sit and listen to a story. Xander couldn't do it. He was able to sit there for 10 minutes. I remember praising God for what he had done just to be able to make that happen. Our God is good. And we have to look, to your point, you know, not only do we need not to reserve our judgment, but we need to be praying for all of our children, not just those with challenges, because all of our children are affected by the fall. They are like their parents, corrupt, right? And they're also impacted physically and mentally and emotionally and all kinds of stuff, not, let alone the baggage we bring to our children in our parenting. But we know that our God is greater and better, and he's a far greater parent and father than we can be. And so be confident, be encouraged, figure out how to pray for one another, pray for our children, pray for their children to come, and just remember the love of our Father in heaven. We'll close with that. Let's pray.